Pesach Sheni before. We mentioned it on the actual day, and we mentioned it a bit yesterday. We're now at the stage where it actually occurs in the Parsha, and we're talking about they're in the desert, and it's now Rosh Chodesh Nisan, right, a year almost since they've left Mitzrayim, and Moshe again repeats all of the detailed rules about bringing the Korban Pesach. And one of the things he mentions, of course, is that someone who is Tomei cannot bring the Korban. The Medrash says there were a group of distinguished tzaddikim who came to Moshe and Aaron, and they were unhappy. It says, we are impure, but we are the agents of Klal Yisroel, and we guard and we carry Yosef HaTzadik's beer. And as we said, Loma Nigoro, why are we going to be deprived of doing this mitzvah, Korban Pesach, which, when we think about it, right, it's the Korban that expresses the existence of a national community. It's our basically our statement, we are Jews, we belong to this community. The Gemara in Sukkah says there's two other possibilities who these individuals were. One is that these were the two Leviim, Mishael and Eltzafan, who were given the task of caring for the bodies of Nadav v'Avihu, who died on Rosh Chodesh Nisan in the Ayel Moed, when they brought the improper korbanos. There's also those who say that these were people who, for the first time, encountered a mace mitzvah. There was a mace that had no one to care for, and they buried it. The Shmos, right? The Medrash Rabbah and Shmos says that Hashem said to Yosef HaTzadik, he addressed him in Shemayim, the Parsha of Pesach Katan, Pesach Sheni, is going to be revealed in the merit of the Jews who carry your bones. Tiferes Zion says, the Chachamim were bothered and they wanted to understand who could have been passed away that they had to care for a dead body. And he said, in the first year of the sojourn, as they were still going to Eretz Yisroel, it says no distinguished person was Nifter, but they said, now we've become Tomei in dealing with someone Choshev. And that's why it says Yosef. And one of the reasons it says when they used the word Adam was because Yosef had been the perfect individual who had basically had mastery over every limb of his body. So Moshe, in being addressed by these people, responded, I agree to your chashivas. I recognize the greatness. And I'm going to ask Hashem to please give me an answer. And I'm going into the Mishkan to speak to him. Moshe entered the Mikdash, spoke to Hashem, and from between the Kruvim, he was given the halachas of Pesach Sheni. It says here that these halachas have not been written in the Torah yet, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to write them in the merit of people who were so particular about doing mitzvos and had this great hislavos, eagerness. Hashem said to Moshe, if an individual Jew, for any appropriate valid reason, cannot bring a Pesach on the first day of Pesach, right, as the case of these who are Tamei, I'm giving you a makeup. I'm giving you a second chance. All the halachas of the Pesach sacrifice will be done by these people on the 14th of Iyar, and they eat it that night, together with matzah and maror. However, there's no halacha that you've got to get rid of chametz, or that the rules of chametz applies at all. The halachas of Pesach Sheni, we're taught in the Gemara, apply when we have individuals or a minority of the people such that they cannot bring the Korban Pesach. But we're taught in the Mishnah in Pesachim that if most of the people, let's say they had to go to war and they were dead from contact with bodies, most of the people are not shunned, they're not told they can't bring the Korban Pesach. Rather, there are cases when a Korban Pesach is brought betumah, even though the people are still technically not pure. We're told that this was the only Korban Pesach brought until the day of Yehoshua crossing, I think, over the Yarden, because in the desert they felt there was a sakana to give a bris to the children because of the travel, or they say because the winds were not conducive to healing, and therefore they refrained from doing bris milah. We know that an orel, someone who has not had a bris, cannot partake of the Korban Pesach. We're told, however, by one of the Mefarshim, that the Leviim were meticulous, that they in fact did practice giving a bris to babies on the eighth day, and therefore they were the only ones who could and would bring a Korban Pesach in the 38 succeeding years. And Chazal points out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't begin Parshas, or actually the Chumash Bamidbar, with the Pesach Sheni concept, because he didn't want to degrade or criticize Klal Yisroel for their lack of having brought the Korban Pesach during their long journey in the desert. Chazal say the first year they could do it, they were in a permanent place, and they didn't worry about journeying, so they kept doing bris milah. Later, the constant traveling seemed to give them a feeling of danger. And even though there might have been places they would stay for a period of time, they never knew if the next day they would have to pick up. They never knew from day to day what tomorrow would bring. The Torah then turns to the greatness of the generation that went in to the Midbar, the desert. It says that they were led by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Anonei HaKavod, the clouds of glory, and it describes how they traveled. There were a number of reasons why the Torah elaborates on the B'nai Yisrael's methodology of traveling, which we know included the banners, the flags, the Mishkan being flanked right around it by the camp of the Levium, and around that the other Shvatim. It says some nations claimed the Jews were wandering aimlessly because Moshe basically was a false prophet and had no idea what he was doing. Therefore, the Torah says, we're recording for all posterity that every time they traveled, it was al pi Hashem. This was not Moshe's MPX, right? This wasn't Moshe's tracking device. It was a Kadosh Baruch Hu's command. The other thing that Chazal point out is the people were never asked when or where they wanted to travel. How long did they want to stay at any one of the stopping posts? Rather, as I said, they knew not day to day if the cloud of glory would pick itself up and move, requiring them to travel. And they did it. They traveled. There were very few complaints or no complaints. In other words, this is the way they were going to live. This was a Kadosh Baruch Hu's command. It says, and they had trying circumstances. Sometimes they came to a place that was like an oasis with great water and trees, and they had to move right off it. They didn't stay long. And other times they would come to an arid, hot, desolate place, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu would have them stay there for a while. And the author of the Medrash says, in retrospect, it seems superhuman that millions of people, including wives, children, etc., could willingly obey this system of travel and demonstrate such a high level of readiness to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. And we know the famous pasuk that says, "Koyamar Hashem lechteich, what's v'charti chesed nuraich lechteich ba midbar be'eretz lo zarua." HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "I remember the kindness of your youth, of when you were first redeemed. Your love is a bride. Your willingness to go after HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my Rabbi Hashem says, me, in the wilderness, in a land that was not sown." Rav Shamshin Rafal Hirsch points out that this wandering at the command of Hashem was a lesson. It was to instill within the Jewish DNA a special level of bitachon, trust. The level of bitachon that the originating Jews from Mitzrayim obtained in following this difficult venture on living on basically this I would say flight plan of knowing that they were subject to eating manna day by day, and that water came from a miraculous well. If you think about it, that's not an easy way to live and to put your mind at rest. And he says, if we think that we have emunah, or that if previous generations had emunah, and with all the terrible occurrences that the Jewish people had to go through, it's only because of this experience. This hardening or characteristic of trusting Hashem was passed down from our great ancestors all the way down to us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu then turns to Moshe and says, I'm going to give you the mitzvah that you're going to need 2 silver trumpets. And this somehow, trumpets, taught the people that Moshe was not just a Navi, but he also had the role of Melech, as if he was a king. Hashem said, you are a king. And the way trumpets are blown for every human king, I want them blown for you. And the HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the chatzrosros that you have are specific for you. No other person, Yehoshua, is going to need his own trumpets later on, as will every other leader. Trumpets are made solely for that one leader. And it says that Kedusha was so great that they had to be concealed before Moshe died, so no one would ever find them. When Yehoshua crossed over the Jordan, and they went against Yericho, the first battle, they had shofros, but they didn't have Moshe's trumpets. The 2 trumpets were to be exactly the same, made of silver. The reason gold wasn't used was because the chatzrosos were used as an avoda to Hashem, and we never use gold, which can probably remind us of the golden calf. I don't think a Kaddish Baruch Hu worries about remembering or not remembering. It says that each time they were going to depart from a spot in the wilderness, there were 3 signals. First, the cloud of glory that would be initially over the Ohel Moed, it says, rolled itself up and became a pillar straight up and down in the sky. Then Moshe would say, Kumo Hashem, the Afutsu Avais, right? The one we say, Hashem arise. And he says, this was somehow a way to ask the pillar of cloud to follow Hashem's direction. It says, then the Kohanim would blow Moshe's trumpets so the people would get ready to travel. It says, other times the trumpets were used was when Moshe needed all of the Kehillah, the entire congregation, to congregate, to be taught something. And he says there were another type of blast if all Moshe needed to have an audience was with the leaders of each tribe. It says, to leave a spot, they blew both trumpets, tekiah, trua, tekiah. If all of Klal Yisroel were to gather, they used two trumpets with a tekiah, and with the Nesiim, one trumpet with a tekiah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the following direction, and we have it in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, right? It says, at the time of calamity, when an enemy attacks, the time of a drought, a plague, or any such thing, the trumpet is blown. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that when you blow the trumpets, it will be considered a favorable response, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look at it as a request for salvation. It says, when Klal Yisroel realizes that trumpets are being blown, all of Klal Yisroel will realize there's a problem, and it says, will wake us up, so to speak, the same way a shofar is supposed to wake us up on Rosh Hashanah, and we will daven, and we will then deserve HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help. It says, once the Beis HaMikdash was established, trumpets were sounded whenever the communal tumid offerings were offered. And there's a Mishnah, I'm trying to remember, maybe in Sukkah, that talks about the number of times daily a trumpet was born. It says the first three were to tell everyone the gates of the Beis HaMikdash were open. Nine were offered during the procedures bringing the tumid in the morning, and nine in the afternoon. So now we're up to 21. If there would be a musav that day, it was Rosh Chodesh, there'd be nine more, there'd be 30. On Erev Shabbos, three sounds were blown late in the afternoon to remind people that Shabbos was coming, or Shabbos was going to fall. This was an early reminder. And as Shabbos was about to begin, I don't know if that meant near Shkia after, you know, or 18 minutes before or what, they blew again. It says in Chazal, what's the reason that we blow the trumpets at the time of the daily sacrifices? It says this too was a reminder of the need to do tshuva. And when the Jewish people turned their mind to tshuva, that's when the korbanos had their greatest efficacy, and they could somehow achieve the celestial, right, requirements, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to happen. It says again that the korbanos were an attempt to tell Klal Yisroel of a constant need to do tshuva. That's why the tumid was brought both at the morning and the evening. Okay. We're then going to turn to the incident of Yisro leaving the Jewish people. It says we're in Eor, the months after, right? The months after Nisan. And Bnei Yisroel are still at the foot of Har Sinai. And Moshe wants them now to prepare for leaving. In other words, they were supposed to now take a 22-day journey to Eretz Yisroel. And the question was now that Yisroel wanted to address was whether or not he should accompany them to Eretz Yisroel or not. And Yisro's reaction was that I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to my homeland, to Midian, and I'm going to try to teach the people in Midian about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and about abandoning idol worship. Okay? And we will pick up from here with the conversation between Moshe and his father-in-law.